We're going to be talking about a general introduction to apologetics and tactics. And of course, people get confused right off when they hear that word apologetics. So we probably do need a better word, but it comes from the Greek. So let's start with the basics here. Have you ever talked about a movie that you liked and tried to give some reasons why? Maybe ended up talking to a friend. He or she said, no, that wasn't that great a movie. You said, yes, it was. And look at the special effects. Look at the characters. I thought the writing was great. Or maybe you've talked about sports teams, why one team has the best center fielder, why a certain team didn't do so well this year that other people expected them to do. So if you're doing that, you've been engaged in apologetics. Apologetics is a pretty simple term. It's just simply a logical defense for whatever it is you believe. And of course, Christian apologetics, that's a specialized field. It's looking at reasons why we believe Christianity is true. Making the case, you can think of it that way. We're making the case for Christianity, like we're in a courtroom. And the goal, pretty obvious, we want to not only change other people, but we want to have confidence, create confidence for every Christian. We want to have clear thinking for every challenge that we face. And we want to have courage and grace for every encounter. That's what we're up to. And there are several verses. Let's just take a look at a few. The cornerstone verse is from 1 Peter 3:15. And here's what it says. But in your hearts, set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. Oh, there's so much right there just in that one verse. It says you start by setting Christ apart in your life. So he's got to be important to you before you start talking to other people. And it says always be prepared, not just get ready at Thanksgiving because you know Uncle Henry's going to come and he'll be a good person to talk to about Christianity. It says always be prepared. These opportunities will come at the oddest times. I was in a doctor's office, and this guy is, as you know, doctors are all busy, and this man was especially busy, but we started talking. He said, what are you doing now that you're retiring? And I said, I'm going to work in apologetics. And he gave me kind of a blank look. I told him what it was. And all of a sudden, he sat there and he got really interested. And we ended up talking about Christian apologetics. I wasn't prepared for that. I didn't think that was going to happen. So we're supposed to always be prepared. And it says to give an answer to everyone who asks you. Everyone. So it may be a little child. It may be a grown-up. It may be a co-worker. It might be somebody hanging over the fence, a neighbor. So it says it's anybody who has questions, but of course the key part is at the end there, doing it with gentleness and respect. We know why. These are fellow creatures made in the image of God, and we want to honor them as such. They're not somebody to be conquered. Are there other verses besides that one in 1 Peter? Well, all over the place. Let's try Colossians 2, verse 8. See to it that no one takes you captive through hollow and deceptive philosophy. So can you hear the warning that Paul is giving there? Don't let anybody take you captive through bad philosophy. So don't get lured, don't get dragged away. Where have we seen that happen? Well, just about everywhere. I'm going to give one fairly recent example, and that's a book called The Da Vinci Code. Good heavens, that book affected a lot of people. They said, gee, I didn't know that about the New Testament. Gee, I didn't know that about Jesus. And they walked away from the faith. They were captivated and captive due to hollow and deceptive philosophy. So can you hear what's going on there? Paul's saying use apologetics as a defense mechanism to protect you from incoming bad philosophy. So that was Colossians 2:8. If we look at 2 Corinthians 10:5, Paul says this, we demolish arguments and take captive every thought. Can you hear the difference between that and the Colossians passage? This one says, you go up against bad arguments, and now you're not defensive anymore. You are offensive. Not offensive, you don't want to be offensive. But you want to be offensive in the sense that you can go after bad arguments. And there are so many bad arguments in our society today. A lot of people think with their heart rather than their head, so there are plenty of bad arguments out there. Here's some more verses. Titus 2:8 says, in your teaching, show soundness. It doesn't say, this is Paul, he's not saying to Titus, hey, when you get to a tough audience, just be sure you give them a lot of emotional language. Give him wonderful hymn singing. He says, no, show soundness. You want to have rational arguments for what you believe in. And all through his travels, it says again and again in the book of Acts that Paul reasoned with people. That's Acts 17:2. He reasoned with them. Acts 17:17. He reasoned in the synagogue. Acts 19:8. Paul entered the synagogue arguing persuasively. So here's somebody that knew how to get the word out. But again, it doesn't say he walked in, sang a few songs, and people came forward with tears in their eyes. Hey, there's nothing wrong with singing. Don't get me wrong. I love music in the church. But this says Paul went into those synagogues and reasoned. He made a case for what he believed in. So what's the value of apologetics? Well, don't we want to change the culture? Would you agree this culture needs changing? People are buying into some bad ideas, and of course we know that ideas have consequences. So we want to change this culture, keep it from being as dark as it is. Secondly, we need to show the value of truth. We didn't have to do this, but good heavens, these last few years, people are saying, what's truth? It's whatever you believe in. That's true for you. And of course, that's terrible arguing as well. Third thing we want to do besides change the culture and show the value of truth is to show that Christians can think. Well, why do I say that? Well, let me give you some examples of quotations from people who are not Christians and see what you think they're saying about Christianity. Mark Twain, back in the previous century, in the 1800s, said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. Oh, so Christian faith is just ignoring reality. Bill Maher, faith is a lack of critical thinking. So in other words, it's for stupid people, or people just want to think in stupid ways. Sam Harris, who's an atheist, said this, theology is now little more than a branch of human ignorance. Not human knowledge, human ignorance. Was it tough for me to find these three people? No, absolutely not. Again and again, Christians are shown, either on television or in movies, just general life, shown to be stupid. And so we want to contradict that. What's the ultimate goal, though? Yes, we'd love to have more confidence. Yes, we'd like to change the culture. Yes, we want to show the value of truth. And certainly we want to show people that Christians can think. But the ultimate goal is to bring people to Jesus. That's what it's all about. So it's not about how clever we are or do we give Christianity a good name. We want to bring people to Christ. Let's take a couple of minutes and talk about some misconceptions about apologetics. We've already used that word argument more than once. And the minute you tell people, well, once you study Christian apologetics, you'll learn how to make a good argument for the truth of Christianity. Oh, people get a little nervous. When they think of arguments, they think of finger pointing, and they think of mouths wide open. They think of neck veins popping out, and they think of spit flying, and they think of red faces. That's not an argument. I teach college, and I have to constantly remind students of what an argument is. It's simply making a claim, whatever it is, making a claim that you believe is true and backing it up with evidence. Now, can you do that without yelling? Sure. Can you do that without finger pointing? Absolutely. Can you do it without getting angry? Yes, definitely. We're making the case. We're trying to say why we believe Christianity is true. It can be done without arguing. So if you're the kind of person, most of us are, and I'm with you, I don't like arguments where people get angry. Well, that's not what apologetics is. Here's another misconception. People feel that Christian apologetics is for white, older guys who wear tweed suits and smoke pipes. Now, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but the idea is, well, it's fine for older brainiacs who want to sit around and impress each other with some kind of study. No, remember what we read? We're all supposed to be apologists. In fact, we are. We're all apologists. The difference is some of us are better at it than others. Anybody, again, child, mother, worker, homeschooled person, whoever, we're all supposed to be involved in this endeavor. What's another misconception? How it should be carried out. We are not gunslingers. We're not going out to blow somebody away at high noon. Remember, these are people made in the image of Christ, in the image of God. We love them. We want to honor them. We want to be fair in our dealings with them. Number four, here's a misconception. What apologetics cannot do. Let's get that straight. Apologetics does not save people. That's up to God. All we want to do is to be faithful. But we all acknowledge that it's up to God. And I'll tell you something. I am very grateful for that. I don't want it to be up to me. I don't want to think after I talk to somebody, I didn't say it right. Now, this may send this person on the wrong path for his or her life. Well, who wants that kind of responsibility? It's up to God. We just need to be faithful. And God will take care of it. Well, what can it do? Well, there's a misconception about apologetics. People think it can save people. No, but what it can do is get rid of some of the misconceptions about what Christianity is. Maybe some people misunderstand it. Maybe they don't know what Jesus was all about. Think of it like a garden. We're just pulling weeds out so the flowers show up or the fruit shows up better. That's all we're doing as apologists. Maybe you think of it as clearing the brush. Here's another misconception. We sometimes feel that we have to have all the answers. Well, I don't know about you, but I don't want that kind of pressure either. Who says we have to have all the answers? Does anybody have all the answers to life? No. What can we do? If we don't know something and we're asked a question or somebody throws out a term that we're not familiar with, three little words, I don't know. Whatever it is, tough question, I don't know. But you want to follow it with something. Don't leave it there. I don't know, but, and I bet you know how to finish that sentence. I don't know, but I'll find out and get back to you. The answers are out there. Do you think anybody is going to ask a question that people haven't thought of? No, absolutely not. Questions have answers. But we just need to be humble and honest. We don't want to pretend that we have an answer and then get caught in a lie later. Here's another misconception. There are a lot of misconceptions, aren't there? If you're counting, here's number 7. Another misconception is what the other person may know. We often overreact when somebody says something about Christianity or the Bible or whatever, and we think, well, if they're talking about it, they must know something about it. No, 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 not at all. People are biblically illiterate. They'll say the craziest things about Christianity. They don't really know. Often they're lazy, sometimes just plain old biblically illiterate. I'll give you one example of that from a very intelligent individual, Richard Dawkins. Now, he's written all sorts of things. He's an atheist, written all sorts of things critical of Christianity. One time he said he didn't think Jesus ever lived, and he got this from some obscure source. People got on him, even fellow atheists said, oh, come on, Richard, you're kind of pushing the envelope there. Nobody really believes that. And he had to back off. So here's a person with probably 55 degrees after his name, Oxford biologist, I think. And he got it wrong. So just because somebody's got a lot of degrees doesn't mean they know what they're talking about when they talk spiritual matters. All right, so the next section here that we want to talk about, let's look at general tactics. So that everything we've talked about till now are just foundational issues, what apologetics is or is not, and what it can do, and the value of it. It's good to have, good information. But I'm sure you'd like to say, but what do I do with it when I go out in the world? What happens when I'm out there? How do I make an effective use of my time? So we're going to talk general tactics first, and then we're going to talk about specific tactics. So what are some general tactics to keep in mind? How about this? Keep it simple. Oftentimes people ask questions, but we do a data dump on them with all sorts of things that we've come up with, often way different than what they're asking about, and we overwhelm them, and they get very quiet. So don't say more than you have to. Find out what it is that they're concerned with and focus on that. Here's another general tactic. Now, this is going to sound odd, so let me explain it, but here's the tactic. Start without the Bible. That sounds weird coming from a Christian, but let me explain that. Many people, as I said before, are biblically illiterate. If you start off saying Galatians says, or Genesis says, or Matthew says, people, first of all, may not even recognize it's from the Bible, but they certainly don't want to hear quotes from particular verses. They don't believe the Bible. They don't understand the Bible. Start with science. Maybe you're talking science. Okay, fine. Start with scientific things. Now, obviously, they do ask a question about the Bible, about who wrote it or how long ago they wrote it, or is there any problem with translations, we'll then deal with that. But better to not let them get their defenses up. Just start without the Bible. Here's a third general tactic. Have resources available. Get yourself, even if it's small, get yourself a library. If you can't afford books, find some good websites and bookmark them and go back to them, because you may get one of those questions where you say, I don't know, but I'll find out, and you better go find out. And plenty of resources. This is a great time to be interested in Christian apologetics. Writers are filling bookshelves up with good material. I've got a really good, I think it's a 2-page resource list, and more extensive 4- or 5-page resource list. So you can always just email me, Gary@apologeticsforlife.org. Gary@apologeticsforlife, all one word, apologeticsforlife.org. Here's a fourth general tactic. Admit if you don't know something. I know we talked about that before, but it's just worth repeating. We've got to be honest. We can't try blowing smoke at people. And then the last one is question authorities. I mentioned Richard Dawkins. Did he know what he was talking about? No, because he was outside of his area of expertise. So don't let somebody say, well, Dr. So-and-so says. You need to question the authority. If a scientist says something, listen, let's take just a second on this. I know this isn't specifically a science topic that we're dealing with, but keep in mind, science doesn't say anything. Science doesn't say anything. Scientists say things. And it's those scientists, despite how many degrees they have after their name, they often have prejudices like the rest of us. So question authorities. Now, let's talk about some specific tactics, ones that work well in particular situations. I'm going to start with two that have been formulated by Greg Kokel. He's one of my favorite apologists. If you go to his website, standtoreason.org is his organization. His website is str.org, and he's got so much good material there. Well, he's got a whole book out called Tactics, and he's going to talk about specific ways to guard what you're doing and to get the conversation moving ahead when it comes to Christian apologetics. And what he starts with is, he said, you've got to know how to use two key questions. Here's the first. What do you mean by that? Here's the second. Why do you believe that, or why do you say that? So let's just look at them one at a time. What do you mean by that? You're asking for clarification. I'll give you an example of how that might work in just a minute. What do you mean by that? In other words, you want to figure out exactly what the person is claiming. Second question, why do you say that? Now, you're asking for support. So in a sense, you're saying, what do you mean? In other words, tell me what your argument is, and then why do you say it? Tell me the support for that argument. Now, what are the values of dealing with these two questions, asking these two questions? Well, first, it takes the pressure off, doesn't it? Person says some kind of statement, you don't have to immediately respond with a big data dump. You don't have to think real quickly about all the wonderful answers you've got stacked in your brain. You can take pressure off you. You can ask that person to clarify before you get involved in the discussion. Secondly, by asking these questions, it shows interest in the other person. And finally, it allows you time to think, because they'll be clarifying while you're thinking of how to respond. So let's try it. Somebody says to you, I don't think there is any God. There's no God. Well, the first question probably won't work there to say, what do you mean by that? Because they'll say, what's the problem? When I say there's no God, there's no God. There's no supernatural being. So that's probably not going to be a great question. But what if you said, oh, you don't think there's a God? Why do you believe that? Now, guess who has to argue for the lack of God? The other person. After all, he or she's the one that made the claim. So why should you, when they say there's no God, why should you be forced to give your reasons why there is a God? That person made the claim, just send that ball right back across the net like it's a tennis match. Ask that person to give reasons. How about this one? All religions are basically the same. Can you think of a way to work that in? You say, what do you mean by that? How are they the same? So don't even start in defending Christianity. Just, oh really, you think all religions are the same? What do you mean? They're the same. And then when they tell you, then you can go on from there. How about this? The Bible's been changed over the years. Well, the question is, what do you mean changed? If you mean translated, of course it's been translated. But they probably mean something different, so get them to clarify. And then, of course, the follow-up question of that, oh, you think the Bible's been changed? Why do you say that? How about this statement? Somebody says, well, the fetus is a person, is human, but not a person. The fetus is human, but not a person. Ask for clarification. What do you mean human, but not a person? What do you mean, what's a person then? And oftentimes the person is just parroting this and is going to have a hard time answering that question. Okay, so does that make sense? Ask two questions. What do you mean? Trying to figure out what they're saying, what their claim is. Why do you say that? What's the support? So there's the first tactic. Know those two questions. You'll use them so often. They'll be a blessing to you, I guarantee it. Here's another specific tactic. So you got those two questions. Now, watch for what's called a self-refuting argument or a self-refuting statement. What does it mean to self-refute? It means the words coming out of your mouth just denied the idea behind the words. So you say, what? Let me give you an example. Somebody walks up to you and says, I cannot speak a word of English. And you say, that's self-refuting. Your statement just refuted or opposed the idea behind it. Of course, you're speaking English. So to tell me you can't speak English and you're speaking English just destroyed your statement. How about this one? All English sentences are shorter than four words. But that's a sentence, and that's more than four words long, so we can ignore what that person is saying. He or she doesn't know what they're talking about. So let's practice this. Somebody says to you, you shouldn't be making moral judgments. Well, let's think about that for a minute. You shouldn't make moral judgments. What did that person just do? They made a moral judgment. So they just ruined their statement. They should not make that statement. They should withdraw it. How about this? Christians are wrong to judge others. What did that person just do? Judge Christians. That destroys that argument. How about this one? There are no ultimate absolute truths. But that's a claim of truth. Is that a truth? If not, we can ignore it. Here's something from Bill Nye, the science guy. Now, I like his organization, Planetary Society, but he's the head of it now, and I have to grit my teeth because of some of the things he says. He gets himself off from science and gets into some big trouble. And here's one example of a self-refuting statement from Bill Nye. I know nobody likes abortion, okay? But you can't tell somebody what to do. Wait a minute. You can't tell somebody what to do. Isn't that Bill Nye telling Christians and others who are pro-life telling us what to do? So you can pretty well ignore that statement since it destroys itself. So now you're going to ask those two questions. What do you mean by that? Why do you believe it? You're going to think about those self-refuting statements. People use them often in our society. Here's another specific tactic. I call it take it to the limit. So here's what I mean by that. First, make sure you understand what the person is saying. And then show how absurd it gets when you take it to the limit or you stretch it beyond what the person wanted. Now, I'll give you some explanation. Now let's look at how that works in reality. Somebody says to you, hey, homosexuality is a natural urge, so it's okay. Well, what is that person really saying? Any natural urge is okay. Do you see that? That's the statement being made. Any urge is okay. Homosexuality is a natural urge, so it must be okay. So you respond. You say, oh, okay, so your principle is that any natural urge is okay. But what about rape? What about smashing someone in the face with your fist? And they're going to say, oh, no, those are terrible. Well, then it's their principle that's wrong. Apparently, not every natural urge is okay. They cannot or they should not be using that as an argument. Let's practice. Somebody says to you, any behavior is okay if we don't hurt other people. Now, can you stretch that? So the principle there is that anything is fine as long as other people don't get hurt. Well, what about if you counterfeit money? Nobody's getting hurt. But is that okay? That behavior is all right. What about being a peeping Tom? You go through the neighborhood, crawling on all fours till you get to windows and look inside to see what people are doing. Hey, nobody's getting hurt. Does that strike you as good behavior? Of course not. How about this one? Somebody says to you, same-sex marriage is fine since they love each other. So wait a minute. So what's the principle there? Apparently, as long as people love each other, then you should be allowed to marry. What about brothers and sisters? Don't they love each other? Two brothers, don't they love each other? How about a dad and his six-year-old daughter? They probably love each other. You say, well, no, that's not right. Good. It's not right because the principle is terrible. Love is not the basis for marriage. How about one more? Women should have the right to choose abortion. Well, women should have the right to choose abortion. What are they saying? Apparently, in this society, we have the right to choose anything we want. Is that true? Do you have the right to go 85 on the freeway? Do you have the right to smoke in a non-smoking area? Do you have the right to yell fire in a crowded movie theater? No. So apparently, we don't have ultimate right to do anything we want. That principle is poor. There's no such thing in a civilized society to choose anything you wish to do. Okay, so can we go back? Are we all right on these things? So you have two questions. What do you mean by that? Why do you say that? You listen for or watch for self-refuting statements and show that that's not going to work. That argument destroys itself. And you take it to the limit. You show that the principle doesn't work. Hope these all make sense. Let's talk about, at this point, just some basic things to remember as kind of a beginning to wrap it all up here. First thing to remember, the results are not up to us. We've said that before, but I think that's really crucial. Take the pressure off your shoulder. It's up to God. God's the one that's going to honor you. The results aren't up to us. We just have to be faithful. Here's another thing. We should probably have a modest goal, meaning, are we going to get them to become Christians in the first meeting, in the first half hour of discussion? No, probably not. But maybe we just give them one thing to think about, and then we can go from there. Here's a third thing to remember. Most people have not thought through religious issues. Oh, boy, is that true. They don't think through religious ideas at all. They're lazy thinkers. They just hear ideas bandied about in society. Here's another thing to remember. We get better through practice. I have a friend who wanted to work with Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons. So he invited them in and started talking to him. He said he got beat up so badly, not physically, but just dealing with their ideas. And he was really lost, and it feels like he really lost some arguments big time. But he learned from them. He wrote down some of the things that came up and thought about his answers, came up with better answers. He's gotten so good now dealing with others from a different religious background. Here's another thing to remember. Facts and reason are on our side. Isn't that good news? We're not defending something that's irrational. Plenty of facts on our side. I've got a lot of other videos and audio presentations that talk about the kinds of facts, whether it's history or philosophy, archaeology, science. Facts and reason are on our side. One last thing to remember, we should make sure that our ideas may offend people, but it shouldn't be our behavior. So there are gracious ways to carry out conversations. We don't want to offend. We don't need to. Let's wrap up with a couple of things here. Rick Schenker is, I think he's now retired from this post, but he was president of Ratio Christi. That's a Christian club on college campuses. That's an apologetics club. And here's what he said. By the way, Ratio Christi is an amazing organization. You might think about getting involved with them. Just ratiochristi.org, and that's R-A-T-I-O, Ratio, and then C-H-R-I-S-T-I, Ratio Christi. Here's what the president said. People will only become Christians when they're persuaded that Christianity is true. people only stay Christians if they believe Christianity is true. The job of the apologist is to show that Christianity is true. Salvation is a supernatural work, but who ever heard of someone being a Christian that didn't first believe it was true? Now, he keeps saying true over and over again, right? So people come to Christ thinking it's true. They stay Christians as long as they believe it's true. And so that's our job, to say it is true. All right, let me tell you a story here of an early church leader. His name is Ignatius. He was actually a student of John, the gospel writer. And he was taken prisoner, and he was going to be taken off to a city to be put to death. But along the way, he had enough time to be able to write some letters. We still have those letters before he was martyred. And here are some statements, pretty amazing. He knows he's going to die. Now, here are some of the statements inside of his letters. Our Lord was truly of the seed of David and the Son of God. Here's another comment. He was truly born of a virgin, was baptized by John. Here's another part. And was truly under Pontius Pilate and Herod the Tetrarch, nailed to the cross for us in his flesh. Here's another statement. He suffered all these things for us, and he suffered them really, and not in appearance only, even as also he truly rose again. Now, why did I give you all those statements? Did you hear again and again? Our Lord was truly of the seed of David. He was truly born of a virgin. He was truly crucified. He truly rose again. Why is he doing this? It's a reminder. He's saying, I'm going to my death, not out of some vague hope, not out of a leap in the dark, not out of wistful thinking, not because that's what my mom taught me. He says, I know it's real. I've thought about it. I've considered it. These are true events, and because of that, I can go to my death. Pretty powerful, and we should have that kind of faith, that kind of confidence. Well, let me suggest, let's see here, how about some resources that might be good for you? Maybe you've seen, there's a movie out called The Case for Christ. The book is powerful. It's Lee Strobel, who goes around to different Christian apologists and asks some tough questions. How about his follow-up book called The Case for Faith? He takes the, I think it's something like 10 or 11 of the most common complaints against Christianity, and again, looks at experts, talks to them, and sees what their responses are. So The Case for Christ, The Case for Faith. He's got a third one, The Case for a Creator. Same thing, he goes and looks at what scientists, Christians say about science. There's another little book that's easy to get through. It's called Know Why You Believe by a man named Paul Little. How appropriate, little book. It's page for page is probably the most powerful book on apologetics because it's short and easy to get through. Know Why You Believe. There are some good DVDs. There's a series called Part of the Truth Project called True You. It's got, for example, one called Does God Exist? Is the Bible Reliable? Things like that. So I hope these are helpful to you. I hope you get involved. I hope you get out and get some conversations going with a proper attitude. If you have any questions, of course, contact me. It's Gary@apologeticsforlife.org. You can get complete notes if you want on the topic that we just went through. I'll get you that resource list that I mentioned before. I've got a list of good websites, good books, good DVDs. If you have particular questions that I can help you with, if you just want some recommendations, let me know. We've also got a certificate program in apologetics where you can gain all sorts of good basic material about Christian apologetics in one easy-to-digest package, and I'll be glad to get you information on that, too.